The final edition Radio Hour is a work of satire intended for audiences who own books, gentrify neighborhoods, and say they like kale. Please consume responsibly, the satire, that is.
Welcome to the final edition Radio Hour. I'm Jeff Chrysler.
And I'm Tony Hedra. This week, we
Tony, stop. This week, we say happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary for what?
Well, 50 years ago, you came to America. And just like Eddie Murphy in Coming to America, you brought comedy and a really stupid accent.
My accent is stupid.
Yeah, it's dumber than his in that movie.
Jeff, we speak English. That is our language. You speak English with an accent. Is that clear, you dumb American brick?
Yeah, it's clear. And if you listen to what you just said, it sounds stupid.
Anyway, 50 years ago, I came to America. That's true. How did you know?
I heard it in the interview halfway through tonight's show.
All right. Yeah. I forgot. So you already listened to the show?
Yeah, I've listened to it. We made it. Together, remember?
Jeff, I'm old. At least 51 years old. What else is on the show?
Well, we get into some of the new gun laws. There's another MSNBC episode, and we explore the religious power of corporate tax loopholes.
Ah, yes. Now you mention loopholes, I remember. We also do some stuff with you kids these days, like Lady Gaga, Facebook, and my favorite punching bag, Miles the Millennial.
Yep. And there's even some stuff about porn.
Yeah.
You should listen to the episode.
Listen to what again now? What?
The final edition Radio Hour.
To kick off our show, here's a little something from the once great state of Georgia.
The following is a paid political message from Idiots with Guns.
Hi, I'm Bill Newport.
And I'm Chris White, on behalf of Idiots with Guns.
You know, every time someone gets in the news shooting an unarmed person, the National Rifle Association rises to defend responsible gun owners. But what about the rest of us?
The Second Amendment to the Constitution doesn't just guarantee guns for smart, responsible people. They're for everyone.
We're idiots, and we have the right to defend ourselves.
Now, suppose I see a black teenager in a hoodie walking down the street at night. What am I supposed to do? Call the police? Do what they tell me? Let highly trained members of law enforcement handle the situation?
Or let's say I've just had a messy divorce, and now my kids and ex-wife are going to continue their lives without my total control.
Plus, you're drunk.
Plus, I'm drunk. So, I have to go home and kill them.
What else can you do?
Do I have another option?
Point is, we're too dumb to think of it. That's why guns must be kept safe and legal for exactly the kind of morons who really use them.
So I can defend my opinion.
And I can defend my opinion.
And I can defend my opinion.
And I can shoot you in a homosexual panic.
What?
I'm not gay.
This has been a paid political message from Idiots with Guns.
The final edition salutes another Facebook hero.
David Mannheimer has a score on Word Twist that is not just high. It is unapproachable. Without his time and sacrifice, the all-time high score in Word Twist would not be as high. Is it in the press that calls on me? I hear a tongue, shriller than all the music, cry, Caesar! Speak! Caesar is turned to hear.
Beware the Ides of November.
Who is that, Brutus?
He is but an addled soothsayer. Pay him no mind.
What is your name, soothsayer?
Natus Silverus.
Why dost he tell me to beware the Ides of November?
That is the way soothsayers talk.
But why November?
He means the election.
The election is never on November 15th.
It's more dramatic that way.
What are you telling me to beware, soothsayer?
In the Roman Senate, you will lose 4 seats.
4 chairs? That doth not seem so bad.
Caesar, Thy party wilt lose control of the Senate.
Art thou shitting me?
Soothsayers do not shit. I'm speaking metaphorically, of course.
Thou wilt lose West Virginis, South Dakotas, Montanus, and Moronius.
You mean Arkansasius?
Aye, and thy party wilt lose at least two of the following four toss-ups. Louisianus, Michiganio, North Carolinius, and the home of the Palinians.
No, not Alaskus. Is there anything we can do?
No, it's set in stone. And by stone, I mean the polls on my website.
Where have I heard that before?
Francus Luntzus, my lord.
He's a Francus Luntzus of the left. Soothsayer, doth this mean the end of our empire?
No, Caesar. That pretty much endeth 40 years ago under Emperor Reagan.
That's the wisest thing he speaketh all day.
Come, Brutus, let us try to raise enough money to prove this soothsayer wrong.
It is too late, Caesar. Whilst thou wast not looking, I have joined the GOP.
Et tu, Brute. I suppose thou wilt stab me in my democratic back now.
No, Caesar. We have a better weapon. The Brothers Cocos.
Weekends at 7 on MSNBC. Tune in for Trying to Sound Like Rachel Maddow with your host, Daryl, Trying to Sound Like Rachel Maddow.
Who is government? What is government? When is government? Where is government? Why is government? How many is government?
He even dresses like her. This is a grown man we're talking about.
Let's say you were stranded on a desert island with Gilligan, the skipper, Marianne, and the Koch brothers.
He's creepy. And he's just what the program executives have been looking for.
I am the walrus. Cuckoo ca-choo. Seriously.
Daryl trying to sound like Rachel Maddow. It could only happen repeatedly on MSNBC.
And now, episode one of Miles the Millennial.
Fellow boomers, I'd like you to welcome our new intern, Miles. Miles is a millennial.
Oh, hello, Miles.
That's a whack name.
Did your mother have you on a road trip?
I can see for miles and miles.
Hey, guys, awesome.
What's awesome, Miles?
Like you guys, interning for a startup?
We're not a startup. We're a multi-billion-dollar company.
Do you know who you're interning for, Miles?
I put it in my cell. Hold on a second.
Boominet, Miles. The Health and Life Extension Project. We're the number one wellness network for young seniors, bringing together the biggest, best, and brightest generation in history so they can live longer, better lives.
Awesome.
Do you actually know what awe is, Miles the Millennial?
Hey, it's like the stuff metal comes from.
That's O-R-E, Miles. A-W-E means amazement at someone's power, charisma, and achievements. Amazement tinged with intimidation.
Awe sounds awesome.
You know, Head Boomer, Miles isn't wrong when he uses the term awesome about us.
Given that we have all the power and most of the money.
And aim to keep it that way throughout the long and rewarding lives we're looking forward to.
Awesome?
You have a girlfriend, Miles?
Do I have to tell you?
Yes, you do.
It's a key part of Boomernet culture to be frank and open about your sexual status.
And preferences.
And experiences.
And experimentation.
It's mandatory, Miles. Your job's on the line here.
I'm seeing this chick, yeah?
Is she a real girlfriend or just a friend who delivers one particular benefit?
We've been hanging out a while.
What's her name?
Bree.
Bree? What kind of a name is Bree?
I hope it's short for, say, Brianna.
Or Bria, or Brielle, or Briellen.
They're acceptable girls' names.
No, just Bree. It's a cool name.
Miles, when you first met, did you know that Bree is a cheese?
No, I don't do cheese.
Ah, Senator, I'd like you to meet my daughter Bree, and this is her boyfriend, Cheddar.
From now on, Miles, we think we're going to call you Cheddar.
Brie is a very pungent, runny cheese, Cheddar. Do you think of your Brie as very pungent and runny?
Only when she's sitting on my face.
Ew!
NSFW, Cheddar.
There's a lady present, Cheddar.
Did you perhaps hope in saying that, Cheddar,
To make us feel bad?
Envious of your sex life?
Because you think we fantasize about having sex with men or women half or a third our age?
In short, that we're dirty old boomers?
Maybe a little bit.
I'd call that blatant generational discrimination, Cheddar.
Ages, too.
We may have to consult our attorneys about that remark.
Do you have an attorney, Ched, old sport?
Are you kidding? I don't have a cent.
So if we choose to press charges for workplace discrimination, you'll be up shit creek without a paddle.
Wow, Ched, old sport. This could be the total end of your career. On the first day of your first job, too.
Are you guys serious? Seriously? I was just trying to make a joke. I didn't mean it. Seriously?
We'll let you know if our attorneys recommend reporting you to OSHA or whatever the applicable federal agency is.
Oh, my God. Please don't report me. What will I tell my parents? Oh, my God. I need this job. My student loans are crazy. I'll do anything. Please. I'm really sorry.
Too late for apologies, Jet Old Sport. You can't unfry an egg. Let's get to work.
Okay, first assignment. Go learn by heart everything in the If You Don't Buy This Magazine, We'll Shoot This Dog issue of National Lampoon.
The what of the what?
Don't ask questions, Miles. You're not a questioning generation. Google it.
On it. But why?
So you'll know what's really funny.
Way funnier than Judd Apatow movies or Colbert or Louis C.K. or Jimmy Kimmel.
Or The Onion or Funny or Die or BuzzFeed or College Humor.
WTF or Jezebel. Or Reddit, or Dig, or HuffPost Comedy Bay. I can see for miles and miles. I can
see for miles and miles. Stay tuned for more of the Final Edition Radio Hour when Lady Gaga goes gah, gah. And Disney Inc. becomes, for tax reasons, the Church of the Holy Rodent.
Welcome back to the Final Edition Radio Hour, a more perfect onion.
Hey, do you like Lady Gaga?
Sure.
Do you like vomit?
No.
Then you are going to love Lady Gaga's Vomit as Art World Tour.
I'm not into vomit.
Enjoy Lady Gaga vomiting all over the world. Madrid, Spain.
Oh no.
Beijing, China.
Yuck, that's the concert? Yuck.
And coming soon, New York City.
That's art? That just seems like puke.
So get ready for the Lady Gaga Vomit as Art World Tour, coming to a city near you.
That's disgusting. I liked her better when she was covered in blood and meat.
That's the next tour, with medical waste and semen.
The Final Edition salutes another Facebook hero.
If you received an inspirational video of a dog doing something, that video probably came to you directly or indirectly through Marla Sanchez. She doesn't just forward every dog video she sees. Oh, wait, that is exactly what she does. I read that wrong. She just forwards every dog video she sees. She also adopts every dog she sees. And at this moment, her tiny studio apartment looks exactly the way you imagine it.
And now Jim Earle reads his poem, I Am the Ideal Candidate for This Job.
I am the ideal candidate for this job because I am able to maintain the young Hollywood voice to write scripts for a variety of entertainment platforms. I am the ideal candidate because I'm able to swallow all the pain this job will cause and rebirth it years later as a giant ball of cancer. I am the ideal candidate because I'm a team player with a positive can-do attitude and I'm willing to turn against my friends and loved ones. I'm the ideal candidate because I can start yesterday and be off the page and in your face 26/7. I'm the ideal candidate because my use of alcohol and heroin challenged dominant media narratives in a new millennial 3D media ecosystem. I'm the ideal candidate because I am a seemingly ordinary man who is currently challenging dominant media narratives within a new millennial 3D media ecosystem of shit.
Jim Earle is currently unemployed.
When was the golden age of marketing? The early 1960s on Madison Avenue? The later 19th century with P.T. Barnum? We here at the Anderson Group believe that the golden age of marketing is tomorrow. Just look what's in store in the next 5 years. Billboards and store windows and even street signs that yell at you.
Hey, buy a sandwich!
Yield to merging traffic!
Look out, it's Beyonce.
Smoke! Don't smoke!
No, don't listen to him! Smoke!
Hillcrest Apartments for luxury living.
Go see this movie! We lost millions of dollars making it!
Use extra virgin olive oil on everything!
Wear this shirt!
Go to the gym, you hog!
And another advancement, once literature can only be accessed through the internet, great books can include localized product placement.
It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of reason. It was the age of foolishness. It was Larry's Auto Detailing out on Route 39 near the interstate.
As Gregor Samsa awoke one morning from uneasy dreams, he found himself transformed in his bed into a monstrous vermin, but still resting comfortably on an adjustable Sleepmaster bed.
Wearing a promotional t-shirt will make people crave whatever product is printed on it.
For some reason, I have the inexplicable urge to attend Lollapalooza 2009.
In fact, highly personalized ads will follow people around.
Are you Joey the Weasel who ratted out the mob boss of Philadelphia 12 years ago and has been in deep witness protection ever since?
Oh my God, I can't believe you found me. What are you going to do to me?
I'm going to show you the latest in hand-painted dishware.
Ooh, these are nice.
And how about targeted door-to-door salespeople?
Yes? Good afternoon. I'm Laura, and a group of experts has determined that I am precisely the right person to sell you a magazine subscription. May I come in?
Well, I don't really... Wait. Who did you say sent you?
Researchers have analyzed your habits, including shopping, web surfing, dating, drunk dialing, butt dialing, walking, and sleeping in public. And they determined the exact right time, place, and person to approach you with bargain magazine subscriptions.
That's insane.
Were you doing anything else just now?
I was... No.
Were you rattling around the house looking for something to read as you do every other Friday around this time?
Yes.
Do I kind of remind you of your Aunt Ethel?
Oh my God, that's it. I was trying to put my finger on it.
May I come in?
But this is... Yeah.
Yes, it's a good time to be alive. The human brain is now ours. In fact, that's our slogan. The human brain is now ours. And we put it on a free t-shirt. Wear it.
The final edition salutes another Facebook hero.
On the last week of every month, Andy Breckenridge sends out invitations, letting people know that his improv team, Babies Gone Wild, is playing the 7 o'clock show in the basement under Nick's lounge. Without these constant reminders, we would never know these shows were happening. And if he had not sent them in the form of an invitation, we would never have known that we were allowed in. And now more from the final edition's finance feature, Money or Die.
Major corporations continue to be nervous about corporate taxes going up and loopholes being closed. Our very own Money Honey Bunny Bucks as the scoop.
Will a second-term Obama finally implement his plan to tax big corporations till they bleed? What do they do? Fred Bread, Deloitte professor of voodoo accounting at the University of Phoenix, thinks he knows.
In our crazy deist republic, what corporate entities have the juiciest tax breaks of all?
GM. GE?
No, silly! Religions! So, if a corporation can prove it's actually a religion, they will pay zero taxes.
To test his theory, Professor Bread took me along with him for a show-and-tell meeting with Robert Iger of the largest entertainment conglomerate in the world, Disney, Inc. I'm home,
I'm home, I'm home, I'm home. Okay, Professor, let me get this straight. You're saying the Disney Corporation exhibits all the characteristics of a religion?
Yes! A better name would be the Church of the Holy Rodent.
Holy Rodent? I don't know.
Hear me out! The Rodentine faith centers around three persons, Mickey, Donald, and Goofy. Icons so sacred they adorned the planes, tanks, and ships which won the crusade against fascism in World War II.
I guess that's true.
So, like the Christian Trinity, the Rodentine Trinity is one in spirit, but with three distinct persons. God the Vermin.
Up and at 'em, pal.
God the Duck. And God the Holy Goof.
When you put it like that, denying it feels almost like blasphemy.
Exactly. These are saints so sacred, not only have they never had sex, they don't even have sexual characteristics.
I like where this is going.
All Disney females from Snow White to Mary Poppins are virgins, especially Bambi's mother, when she presents the world with her little Bambi, the Bambino.
The princess boy.
This is genius.
Wait, what about Minnie?
I would surmise that Minnie had a murky past before she got together with Mickey. Meet Minnie Magdalene.
You clown.
Now that's a global blockbuster. Mickey, Minnie, Donald, and Goofy return in an animated New Testament. Get me Katzenberg.
Finally, there's Disney's immutable doctrine of resurrection after death. Or apparent death.
That's true. All the heroines die and come back to life. Snow White, Sleeping Beauty, Ariel, Mulan.
Heroes, too. What about Mowgli?
And Pinocchio. Pinocchio even has a conscience, Jiminy Cricket.
There's two ways to do anything, the right way and the wrong way.
Whose initials are?
J.C.
Pinocchio undergoes the torments of Jonah in the belly of a whale and is transfigured by resurrection into a real boy.
I'm a real boy!
Plus, his father is a carpenter!
Oh, my God.
I would argue to the IRS that Pinocchio fulfills the opening words of St. John's Gospel. In the beginning was the wood, and the wood was made flesh.
Oh, my God.
This is huge. No way we'll ever pay another cent in taxes. In fact, I'm renaming our Florida operations tomorrow. I can see it now. Disney World to come. The magic Kingdom of Heaven!
Brilliant! That should cinch it tax-wise.
Disney has already applied to the IRS for tax-exempt status as an established faith. Experts from Deloitte say it's a slam dunk. Disney will then rebrand itself globally as the Holy Rodent Empire.
And you wish upon a star. Makes no difference who you are. Anything your heart desires will come to you.
Coming up next in the Final Edition Radio Hour, Jeff and Tony talk. We talk about comedy, history, and getting arrested. Stick around.
Welcome back to the Final Edition Radio Hour, a more perfect onion.
After the smashing success of our discussion last week about the 30th anniversary of Spinal Tap, we have decided that we will continue what is now a series of conversations about comedy and history and satire and its place in the world between myself, Jeff Kreisler, and Tony Hendra.
Yes, it's true that it's the 30th anniversary of Spinal Tap this year, but it is, in fact, this very week was the 50th anniversary of my landing on these shores. And at the time, I was fairly fresh out of Cambridge, where I'd been in the footlights with, amongst others, John Cleese and Graham Chapman. And I had a partner in those days, a guy called Nick Ullett. And we had established a little reputation for ourselves in London after coming down from Cambridge. And one of the places we played was called the Blue Angel. And one of the headliners who was booked in the Blue Angel was Jackie Mason. And he had a manager whose name was Bob or Robert Chartoff, who would later go on to many wonderful things, such as producing Rocky 1 through 28. And Bob not only liked us, but he said, if you ever want to come to New York, I will take you under my wing and manage you. And who knows, you might become the Beatles of comedy.
That's great.
And that was a very nice, crisp little slogan to live on. And at that time, you could get a first-class stateroom on an ocean-going liner from Southampton to New York if you agreed to do a show for the passengers.
Yeah.
Well, just one show in the course of a four and a half day.
The original crossing. Cruise ship gig.
Indeed. Indeed. And so we thought that was pretty great. And we got our first-class stateroom and sailed from Southampton in late March of 1964. And as we found out later from the crew, it was the worst crossing that anyone could remember.
Hmm.
So bad, in fact, that the entire complement of 800 passengers got violently seasick, and except for me.
From the ships tossing the sail, or the cruise itself was...
And the SS United States, by the way, had special trimmers, I think they were called, which were supposed to control, you know, pitching and yawing. Despite them, it was a hideous crossing, and so we never had to do our show. So, anyway, on the morning of March the 23rd, 1964, after a Scotch-fueled evening and night, staying up to see the Statue of Liberty
preparing
rise.
To welcome America.
Indeed.
As she welcomed you.
Indeed. Seeing the Statue of Liberty rise out of the polluted mist of New York Harbor.
It's very clean now, by the way.
Very clean. And I must say, Liberty was a little bit of a disappointment, but I didn't see her entire body, just her head, the crown, basically. And within...
Do you think that part of your development as a satirist has to do with the fact that you just saw clouded Liberty?
Yes, that's actually a very good point. That image has indeed stayed with me. I see liberty as through a polluted mist.
I
unclear.
There's your album cover. Liberty, your next album cover.
Liberty is opaque to me. But in any event, Bob had arranged for us to appear at a Hootenanny. And a Hootenanny was kind of like American Idol for folk singers and mimes and other entertainers.
When I first got to New York, there was the alt scene at the time, back in the end of the 90s, I guess. There was a great show. It was called the Hootenanny. It was a Sunday night, and it was a variety show in what I consider true New York style, from fire eaters and strippers to comedians and just acts I can't even describe.
Well,
I don't know if that's what you had. But.
Yes, I mean, the Hootenanny at that time really meant kind of the folky fringe, and comedians who aspired to that, which were not, there were not very many of them, but and it took place at a place called the Bitter End, legendary Bitter End. So at the time, we were Nick and I were doing. Still doing our kind of footlightsy Cambridge twittering kind of British satire. And it was pieces like this.
We'd like to sing you now, quite seriously, one of the most beautiful lyrics ever written in the English language. What else could I mean but Wordsworth's very famous poem, To the Daffodils. I wonder lonely as a cloud that floats on high or crazy think the earth. Well, once I saw a crowd of the golden daffodils beside the lake, beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze.
Or this.
Good evening. Here is the news.
Sorry, I'll read that again. Here are the news. It was announced this morning that unless Britain's debt to the International Monetary Fund is not discharged by the end of the month, the government will be forced to accept the American government's generous offer of $500 million and sell the Queen.
So we went on with this kind of material at the bitter end, and for completely unexplained reasons, brought the house down. And
it's just like that for every comedian. This gig, Jackie Mason brings you over to New Country. First gig, you kill it. Perfect. I hate you so much.
We kill. As it happened, we never killed again for quite some time. But based upon this act of mass murder, we actually got like 6 months of work. Because we were right then and there after like a day in New York. We were hot in New York. It was fantastic. And the first job, the first booking we got, or the first booking we accepted, was at a very new place called the Cafe Ogogo, which had just opened across Bleecker Street. And the owner, Howie Solomon, wanted us to open for his first big comedy act, who was Lenny Bruce. So Hendra and Ullett actually opened for Lenny Bruce at his legendary gig, which in April of 1964. And we sort of knew all his routines. So we were sitting there on the edge of the stage, literally at his feet. And although many people who've written about this gig, because as we'll unfold, it was a particularly notorious one, which basically ended Lenny's career, have said that Lenny was already in decline at that point, but I didn't think so at all, and I knew his material fairly well. But he did this sort of wonderful, seemed to me like almost like a victory lap, where he was doing his well known material, such as this.
Ladies are one emotion, and guys detach. Not consciously detached, but they just do detach. Like a lady can't go through a plate glass window and go to bed with you 5 seconds later. But guys can have head-on collisions with Greyhound buses in disaster areas. Everybody's laying dead on the highway. Not only the hospital, in the ambulance, the guy makes play for the nurse. Like, how could he do a thing at a time like that? Well, I got horny. What? You're hot. How could you be hot when your foot was cut off and you're dead? I don't know. He's an animal! He got hot with his foot cut off! I guess I'm an animal. What did you get hot at? The nurse's uniform. It's a moron, that's all. He's just an animal. It's guys detach and has nothing to do with them liking, loving. You put guys in a desert island, they'll do it to mud. Mud.
And of course, the wonderful
Christ and Moses both possessed humility. Why? Wisdom. That's it. Anybody who is secure, there's never any hostility because he's cool. So they just stand in the back of St. Patrick's and they listen, look at him. Cardinal Spellman would be relating love and giving and forgiveness to the people, and Christ would be confused because their route took him through Spanish Harlem. And you would wonder what 40 Puerto Ricans were doing living in one room. This guy had a ring on it, was worth $8,000. And he would wonder at the grandeur. See, why aren't the Puerto Ricans living here? It's clean and nice. And maybe Bishop Sheen would see them back there and run up to Spellman in the lectern. Psst, I want to talk to you for a minute. What is it? What is it? You'll never guess who's here. Who's here? You're not going to believe me. You're going to think I've been drinking. All right, who's here? Christ and Moses. Are you sure it's them? Well, I've just seen them in pictures, but I'm pretty sure it's them. Moses is a ringer for Charlton Heston, and I'm sure. They're back here, yes. All right, it's only... If this ever gets around now... It has. Oh, Christ, don't look in the front door. The lepers are coming. Hi.
And no doubt, as a result of this extraordinary victory lap that he was taking, he was busted 2 days into the gig as he came off stage by four NYPD detectives.
So was those? I mean, I knew around then. That was the gig.
That was the gig. Huh. And he was busted for obscenity, but as I sort of figured out later it wasn't really obscenity that Lemmy was busted for. This is a whole other discussion, obviously, but it's my theory, which I expounded at some length in my book, Going Too Far, that Lemmy was never really busted for obscenity. Lemmy was busted for being very rude about Catholicism. And since the big cities in which he played, notably San Francisco, Chicago, and New York City, had police departments which were 90% Irish,
yeah,
and or Italian, and therefore Catholic, did not go down so well. And I think that's one of the reasons he was repeatedly busted in these places. But just as one little addition to that, one of the few new pieces that Lenny was doing at that time in his routine was about the assassination, and he had a bug in his head about a Life magazine article, which had shown Jackie, it's a very famous picture, Jackie sort of crawling off the back of of the Lincoln. And Life captioned this obvious moment of fear and trembling on the First Lady's part as the First Lady going for help. Obviously, on the face of it, was absurd, but
help was coming.
But help was standing on the right. Side, was standing on the running board.
Right.
But Lenny really, really took exception to this, and what he said was, "No, she was not going for help. She was hauling ass to save ass," and that went down. I mean, especially with the newly canonized Saint Jackie, the poor grieving widow,
a bit of a thud.
That did not go down at all well with the boys in blue, and I'm quite convinced that that's basically why he was busted, because when he came back, having been bailed out to do the second week of his gig, he did the same thing and was busted again. And in the subsequent trial, of all the charges against him, there were actually 10 charges of obscenity against him, 9 of which were using words like, you know, cocksucker and yeah, doing it with mud and, you
Does
know,
that mean drinking coffee
Eleanor,
while
Eleanor,
doing crosswords?
Yeah, well, I mean, but Eleanor Roosevelt's tits, you know. But the 10th one of them was that he said, and the First Lady was hauling ass to save ass. She wasn't going for help.
So they would say that ass was the obscenity when really it was the imagery.
And ass, I mean.
Right. Did you, though, get any notable response? Did you, like, creatively, did you grow from working his audience besides sort of being in his presence?
Not remotely.
Okay.
We did our twittering English satire to dead silence.
Okay.
But we didn't care that we were bombing. I mean, obviously, this was an extraordinary adventure to have had within 3 weeks of landing in the United States. And it taught us that, obviously, it was very, very easy, or apparently very easy, to become hot in New York.
Yeah.
And it was just as easy to get busted for being too funny.
Well, it sounds...
So these were mixed messages. Yeah. Let's put it that way.
Well, it also, it's like a three-week... It sounds like what Hollywood would make out of the journey of a comedian or a comedy duo that you picked up by Jackie Mason. You get on a boat that is all a terrible, you know, you guys would probably be scared on the boat ride in the movie. You land at the shores with Cloudy Liberty. You show up, you do one gig, next thing you know, you're opening for Lenny Bruce and his famous thing. Like, Hollywood would make that all happen in 3 weeks. In reality, that happens over the course of 3 or 10 years, and you actually did it in 3 weeks.
We actually did it in 3 weeks.
Well, this has been another Talk with Tony.
Hey, Talk with Tony, thank you.
Discussion with Tony Hendra about some comedy stuff. We're going to keep doing this now, because I think we found that our fans are also fans of comedy history, and stick around for more.
Stay tuned for more of the Final Edition Radio Hour when we meet a hillbilly mutual fund manager and we launch a new segment all about everybody's favorite secret subject, porn. Welcome back to the conclusion of the Final Edition Radio Hour, A More Perfect Onion. It looks like we might make it after all. The Final Edition salutes another Facebook hero.
For any woman who has been on OkCupid and has wanted the world to know how stupid everyone looks when they're trying to start a conversation online, Laura Benning has posted the many imaginative ways she has told off some lonely schmuck who has approached her in an awkward fashion. Log on. See how clever she is.
The Final Edition salutes another Facebook hero.
Each day, Arnold Prater has faithfully posted his support for the University of Kentucky's men's basketball team. Without his many posts, his many, many posts, the Kentucky Wildcats probably would have been ejected from the league.
Up-to-the-minute radio auteurs like us rarely even think about that lost decade of the 70s, let alone revisit it.
but the 70s were good for one crucially important cultural phenomenon, modern porn. Without the 70s, we'd have none of the positions, techniques, entrances, and exits, or brightly colored, tickly rubber things we now know and love and associate with a failing marriage. In honor of the sex-mad 70s, we're launching a new talk show, Porn Again. Meet its hostess, 70s porn queen extraordinaire, Linda Butsky.
Welcome to the first episode of Porn Again. I'm here with the fantabulous king of drag queens and Porn Again's spiritual advisor, the Reverend Rue. Hi, Rev.
Well, come, all ye faithful. And I mean come, okay?
Tonight we'll be meeting an old porn star.
You mean porn star?
No, porn star from the UK, or as I say, uck. And Rue has a consumer report on Prada's new leather dildo line. But first, how about a trip down memory lane?
Make that mammary lane.
To 1971. It was after my first big hit, Sperms of Endearment. I'd been cordially invited to the Playboy Mansion. Yes, yes, everyone was naked, but you couldn't see anything for all the hair. Remember, this was the 70s. Every chick in the place looked like she was giving birth to Bob Ross. Anyway, I'd heard the Hef himself had taken a specific liking to old Milky Boom Booms here. This could make or break my budding career. But even back then, he looked like a 6-foot-tall nutsack filled with prehistoric bird bones. So I'm visiting the bar every 5 minutes, trying to down enough apricot brandy to make that geriatric crypt keeper look like Neil Diamond with a $1 million bill shoved up his asshole. Now, for those of you who have no taste or don't speak the English, that's pretty humpin' sexy, okay? It's also impossible. That's when I felt it, on my back. The cold, brittle touch of a bony hand, which still sends chills down my spine. I turned and came face to face with what looked like the discarded love child of a transgendered goblin and a California raisin. Someone had dressed it in a smoking jacket and an ascot. It plucked the pipe from its crinkled, fleshy beak and squawked, "I'm Hef!" I screamed and ran into the smoky unknown of the mansion. Where was I going? I didn't know. Who knew, but I was going to get there fast. Finally, I came to a dead end. I could hear its talons scraping close behind, and I knew my time was running out. "Don't be shy, beautiful," the pruny mutant grunted breathlessly. So I picked the door to my left, entered a room of pitch darkness, and bumped mouth to mustache with a dark, bushy provocateur. "Your body for my silence," he said. Well, what was a girl to do? So I did it all. The blumpy, the bronco, the Mai Tai, the brown necktie, the carpet cleaner, the chili dog, the Cleveland steamer, the Davy Crockett, the Davy Jones, the Davy and Goliath, the flying camel, the gobstopper, the hot Carl, and the Indian Cockburn. And that, boys and girls, is the story of how I met Burt Reynolds.
This portion of the Final Edition Radio Hour is brought to you by LayPal. No stolen credit card numbers. No statements with transparently obvious circumlocutions for sex services dreamed up by brain-dead porn merchants. No lingering paranoia about blackmail. No records. No paper trail. What happens with LayPal stays with LayPal. Open your anonymous account and keep it current. When you need to get laid, just click on LayPal. Your lay will be on his or her way. LayPal, The world's most loved way to lay and get laid. Bitcoins accepted.
Welcome back. I want you to meet an old dear.
But reliably odd.
You can say that again.
But reliably odd.
Friend of mine, British love legend, Big Ben Bumster.
Hello, my darling. How are they hanging?
Quite nicely, thank you.
A bit nearer half-mast than 40 years ago, but still toothsome. You see, listeners, Linda may not have divulged same, but this being radio, we're sitting here starkers. I'm fondling her knockers as we speak. Oh, crikey. Oh, crikey, here's a lump the size of a tennis ball. Oh, no, hang about, it's one of your nipples.
Right. I'm returning the favor with Big Ben's little stack of dimes. You see, folks, Big Ben's famous for being the worst-hung male star in porn history.
Which has made me top of the pops for decades, because every bugger in Britain thinks he's Willy's weenie.
Speaking as a buggeree, they're right.
Ah, the 70s, when we were young.
And hairy. Hair pie for dinner, 24/7.
I miss hair.
The musical?
No, the stuff that grows on your growler.
Your growler?
Yeah, growler. Cockney rhyming slang. Growl and grunt rhymes with...
Okay, we were talking about the 70s. You know what I miss most? The word beaver.
Oh, yeah. I miss that. Those were the days, weren't they? Hey, wasn't that... That was, You remember being... We were in that together, weren't we?
Of course, yeah.
It was called, Leave It to Beaver.
That was the one.
It was great.
Okay, that's about it for this week. Please join us again next week when I will talk about my greatest endeavor, Schindler's Fist, for which I won an Adult Academy Award. That's right. Which was well-deserved because that film was a giant pain in my ass.
The Final Edition salutes another Facebook hero.
Tina Warburton of Brooklyn, Larry Scarborough, also of Brooklyn, George Spellen of Queens, Marcia Smithfield of Los Angeles, and Guillermo Schultz of Brooklyn, have all been generously posting jokes from their rejected Daily Show packets. These people are all heroes.
The Final Edition Radio Hour East was performed by Jeff Chrysler, Jen Dodd, Rob Gordon, John Marshall, Darby Worley, Bruce Cherrett, Kevin Janis, and Tony Hindra. The Final Edition Radio Hour West by Jeff Hendrick, Ebby Parker, Barry Link, Jim Earl, and Steve Rosenfield, with music by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. It was written by Barry Link, Jeff Chrysler, Jen Dodd, Jim Earl, John Marshall, Steve Rosenfield, and Tony Hindra. The Final Edition Radio Hour was edited by Andrew Hammond and Greg Russ and produced by Tony Hindra and Jeff Chrysler. West Coast production by Barry Link. This has been a production of The Final Edition, LLC, copyright 2014.